Yeah, and I think I would use the bathroom and my mother's office to travel to the planet. That was supposed to be like how you got there.
Oh my goodness.
A portal potty.
Ah! That is so cool!
Oh my God.
Amazing.
We just finished our conversation with Autumn Brion, which you're about to listen to. Bean, first reaction. I didn't even let you say anything. I was like, hold on, let's record it live.
It doesn't matter because half the episode, my mouth was just hanging open per usual. But I kept saying to Corey, my husband, this morning, we have the coolest guest coming on. And like, I don't even know what to say. She's so cool. And she's everything. She's like cool, creative, brilliant, beautiful. She's literally everything. Yeah. Caring, soulful, like all of these amazing things. He kept being like, what is she doing? Like everything. And I feel like you'll hear it in this episode. She's incredible.
Yeah, she's a multidisciplinary artist and activist, and she uses her medium really to open our eyes to messages we need to see. And I just have to say, I think that was one of my favorite interviews ever.
So, 100%.
Without further ado, here is Autumn Brion. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we have the iconic Autumn Brion, multidisciplinary artist, here to talk to us about all of her incredible work. Bean, you ready?
Super excited.
Hello, welcome to the show, Autumn.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with y'all.
We are so psyched. We have been fangirling you all week as we've been researching your work. And is there anything, Autumn, that you don't do, honestly?
Ah! That is so sweet. That's so sweet. I get to work on a few different things.
Yeah.
And make beautiful things from the things that interest me.
We are so excited to get into it. So Autumn, you're a multidisciplinary artist and an activist. And your work is really about reimagining freedom through beauty and storytelling. So I want to hear that in your words. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. I get to use art and create this visual vocabulary for what liberation looks like to me. It just happens to be the language that I use. I think that the idea of liberation, it's not something brand new. And we just need visual reminders and cues to let us know that it's possible, it's happened before, and we're on our way. So I get to contribute to that visual language.
Wow.
Can we reverse for a quick minute and talk about Autumn's background first? Because that's even more mind-blowing. And then I want to understand how you transitioned out of that into what you're doing now. It's wild.
Yeah. I studied engineering. My degree's in aeronautics and astronautics.
Amazing.
And you know, I never really thought, and I'm so grateful for this, but I never thought that mathematics and engineering were not creative.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think these silos that are created around disciplines oftentimes will hurt us because we think that there's just a certain way of thinking that you use for a job, for something that you might study, whatever. But I think that we're all creative people because we're human.
Yeah,
and there's something exceptionally creative about dreaming up what exists past our planet and figuring out how to get there and how to learn more about it. I think that's creative by design. So I think I have always been creative. I just transitioned into visual art from my work in engineering.
So, okay. Now you just say that like, it's like, yeah, no big deal.
Right. I did this. Now I do that.
That is still quite a leap. And it's a leap, I think, you know, and maybe I'm projecting my own personal experience onto you, but I left a career that was one way and moved into a more spiritual and, you know, self-trust and expression kind of, you know, thing. And I know that there is a lot of internal battle that goes on, let alone the external, what the hell are you thinking? So can you just let us in on, was it as simple as like, oh, look, I'm an engineer and I understand deeply that there is more out there than meets the eye. And now I'm called to it spiritually. And so easy transition. Or, you know, were there some left turns? Were there some, you know, moments of self-doubt? And I ask this only because, you know, our listeners are really following along this journey of self-trust, like how to trust yourself in this moment of change and you know, even crisis. So talk to us a little bit about like the reel of that transition for you.
Yeah. Yeah. The path had lots and lots of turns. That's for sure. That's for sure. Not a straight, smooth path at all. I was always interested in contemporary art. As an observer, that was through exhibitions in galleries and museums. And then I actually started like making work and organizing performances and organizing group exhibitions with other friends that were artists and curators and art advisors as well. And it just, it kept on being something that I would make time for. Like I felt like, okay, you know, I do my job, but that was what I was always trying to make time for when I wasn't working. Mm. And I just started to wonder, what would it mean for me to organize my life around what I keep on feeling pulled to and called to art? I understanding the ecosystem of contemporary art and identifying who the players were, what the roles were. So what does a curator do? What are the different styles and mediums of art? How do you work with the gallery? What's the relationship with museums and other institutions? And I just started finding people and asking questions. I did an intensive art where I was able to actually study art. And I was spending time in Italy where I was examining that with a lot of my time. But even when I was like in high school and in college, like when I look back on it, I see how I was drawn to art in ways that I didn't even know. I would take art history courses when I could.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that was going to lead to me becoming an artist. And then eventually I just started to think like, okay, let me save up enough money, knowing that my goal is to start my own studio practice and to move back to LA. And I think it's so important to have like people in your tribe, in your corner that also encourage you and know what the goal is. And my mom was super important for that part of my journey. When I told her I want to focus all of my time on a full-time studio practice, she asked me if it scared me. Mm. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Because this wasn't a part of my plan, but I keep on being drawn to it and I want to test it out. She said, well, then you have to.
Wow.
You know what you'll go back to. You have your safety net if you need to return, but at least try it out. And I did.
What amazing wisdom from your mom to not project 100%. Any kind of fear, because our parents 100%. Are always trying to protect us by asking us, not all parents, obviously, but you know, it's common that parents want to project the safer route.
Right.
And so I love that she was like, oh, you're scared. That's your soul saying, hey, pay attention to me. Which is amazing. Now, I want to make sure that we're all clear. Tell us about the kind, you're a multidisciplinary artist. So what are your mediums?
Yeah, yeah. Performance, sculpture, installation, and also collage.
Wow. And do you have a favorite right now?
I have a favorite of yours after you share your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I love your vending machine. I love your vending machine. Can you tell us about that?
Too.
Wait, let her tell us her favorite first.
Yes, you tell us your favorite. I'm sorry, I jumped in front of you.
It's okay. It's okay. I don't know if I have a favorite. It typically works out where the message dictates the medium. I'll start with knowing what needs to be communicated. And from there, I'll know what medium is most appropriate. Cool. I love the Care Machine too. And that I was able to settle on a vending machine because I started by knowing that I wanted something interactive and intuitive that audiences could use to engage with care and mutual aid. So we all know how to use vending machines. We see those a lot. And I also believe that we know how to care for each other and we know how to care for ourselves. So it was just injecting care into something familiar, like a vending machine.
So let's, for people who haven't seen this, Autumn created, it's pink, right? This pink traveling, right? Can you travel? It moves, right? A traveling vending machine that has reproductive healthcare within it. So where did you install this? And what was the reaction?
Yeah. So the very first place that the Care Machine was installed was in Inglewood, which is also where my studio is, at the Crenshaw Dairy Mart, which is an incredible art gallery and art center that's on Crenshaw. Okay. And I was an artist fellow for this Fellowship for Abolition and the Advancement of the Creative Economy. Wow. So the culminating exhibition was where I premiered the Care Machine. It's a hot pink vending machine. It glows. Everything inside of it is free. The contents are based on what Black women requested when I asked them what provides care or reminds you of care. So it has abortion pill resources. It has tampons, pads, lube, Narcan. But it also has books, candy, lip gloss, edge control, edge brushes, braiding hair, all of these needs, things that provide care in different ways that are just as important, and everything should be as accessible as getting it from a vending machine.
I was going to push back on your statement about everybody knowing how to do self-care. I don't think everybody does. And I think that the vending machine actually makes it really accessible for those who can't figure out how to easily access self-care.
Well, what a good example of the medium being the message too, right? Like, you know, this should be as easy as getting a candy bar, your access to whatever reproductive health care or, you know, just general self-care. I think I love how simply it's being presented. And I think that that would make you think when you see it, like, oh yeah, why shouldn't I be able to access this stuff?
Right.
That's so important. Like, that's what I want people to realize. With any exhibition, with any installation performance, I always want the audience to walk away understanding that you may have experienced utopia for this brief moment that you were in the gallery, but you should be able to ask, why can't this be a part of my everyday life? Right. And then feel empowered to make it a part of your everyday life because you've seen that it's possible.
Yeah. Okay, so we spent a lot of time on this, but man, girl, do you have a lot of things that we can get into. I want to talk about your spiritual, your soul journey, because so much of what you do is around bringing that essence of like the core of our spirit to life. And it feels to me deeply divine. Can you talk about how that plays in? What is your own spiritual practice and story, and how do you fold that in? You know, you're making this beautiful art, you're an activist. So I love that you said, you know, the art is based on the message that you're trying to help people understand and have access to. Now, where does spirit come in to all of this?
Yeah. Spirit is interwoven into the act of making, the act of conceiving the idea, and then like the communion that exists between me, the object, and the audience. I think with any artist, just when creativity is a part of your everyday life, that is a very spiritual act because I'm putting pieces of myself into what I'm making.
Right.
And then giving that to the universe. I'm releasing it. So I take it really seriously. It's like a prayer when I'm in the process of making. Wow. And I feel that so much in performance, especially a durational piece that I did this year for Adriana Smith. Mm-hmm. She was pregnant in Georgia, was declared brain dead when she didn't get the care that she needed, went to multiple hospitals, knew that something wasn't right, and was actually a nurse. So she knew her body.
Really knew. Yeah.
She knew. She knew. In addition to her own intuition, physiologically, she knew that something was wrong.
Right.
Was declared brain dead once it was too late, once they identified that there were brain clots, blood clots in her brain. But because she was pregnant in the state of Georgia and the 6-week abortion ban, her body was basically used as an incubator until the fetus could be removed from her. And her family had to take care of all of these medical expenses that were growing every day with her being on life support and had no say in what they wanted to happen with their daughter, with their family member. So for this durational performance piece, I would lay down in a public place for an hour every day with my own vitals being monitored with sandbags on my body. And the weight of the sandbags would grow every week that she was left on life support. Wow. And that I think of spirituality and how spirit showed up in that performance, because I needed a place to put my grief and to be able to process. Mm-hmm. Yet I knew that I wasn't the only person that needed to grieve. Mm-hmm. What a privilege that I was able to use my own body as the site of performance, but to invite other people into grieving, into a prayer, and into putting rage somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's always a conversation, like a give and take between knowing what I'm experiencing and also knowing that I am not isolated in those emotions. There's a constant reminder of that I have.
It's always personal and collective, you know? And I think when you're on your purpose journey, it's always in your highest good and the highest good of others. And so I love that you just named processing grief is something we all need to experience. And I think people reminding us of that, especially, you know, especially for me, it's like, obviously the news is heartbreaking every day, but like when you see something that is separate from you in such a significant way, right? You didn't know this person. They're not, you know, you don't have a relationship with them. And yet you feel such a deep emotion for what's happening to them. I do think a lot of us turn away from that because it doesn't make sense, or we think it's crazy, or it's too, you know, too sensitive, too whatever the fuck word, you know, woke, whatever word is not, we're not allowed to say anymore. But like, you know, these are the things that I think we need artists and activists to remind us of is like, no, when one person is suffering and we feel like we're suffering, it's because we are connected. And I think that I really hear that in your work and in part of your spiritual purpose here. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder if a part of why so many people attempt to look away, if it's because of that fear that we were talking about. Yeah. If fear is a part of it too. And in order to protect ourselves, if sometimes we feel like we need to go in the opposite direction instead of looking that straight in the face.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I know I'm dominating, but there's so many great questions though. Yeah. Well, it's making me think about this war against activism right now that's happening. And, you know, I've been thinking about it for a while because so many of my dear friends are activists, especially in the LGBTQ plus community. And I wonder if there is this sense of wanting to take action that many people don't feel they have access to, or that they're, you know, they don't know what to do. So there's a powerlessness that I think can get misdirected as anger. And then there's the group that feels like, don't make me change, because that means you don't accept, you're not listening to me. You're not hearing me. What's your take on what I'm saying as an activist, like in terms of how activism is being so villainized in a moment when we need it more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think the label activism can be a part of what deters folks from action.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think it's important to understand that all of us, each and every single one of us, have something that we can contribute. And there's no such thing as something that's too insignificant. Like, I think we have to be reminded of the responsibility and what we have to offer as individuals. And it's so easy to think, I can only be an active participant if I am an expert, if I have these credentials, if I've experienced whatever. When that's not the case. As a human being, and since you are a resident on this planet, there is something that you can contribute in bending the arch towards liberation, because all of us are going to benefit from it. And if you are affected, then you can contribute. I think that's something that we have to remind folks of. And I think it's really easy to think that you aren't qualified or that something doesn't impact you, when just by being human, you are qualified. I think that's I think that's like the paradigm shift that needs to happen.
Yeah. Just by being human, you're qualified. Yeah. Beautiful.
And like, it can be mutual aid. Like,
right.
We have to remember also, I always talk about like our ancestors and our elders and how important it is to remember that as scary as the present might be, it is not brand new. There is nothing brand new.
Right. Right.
And think about what the people before you did. Like, even if you're growing something in your garden and you can share it with somebody that may not have access to food right now, you're doing your part.
Well, and I think so many people are doing those things. They're just not labeling it, like you said. And I do think that, like, we need to just, I think the smarter way to resist is just shift the language. Okay, we'll call it something else, but it's not going to change the action. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bean, please. It's your turn. I'm going to shut up.
You're going to say something.
Yes.
You have a tarot deck coming out today.
I do.
Which I'm very excited that you're on the pod today and it's your big day of release. And I would love you to talk about that a little bit. I looked at it. It's awesome and beautiful.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. It's called Everyday Oracle. There are 40 cards and it's meant to be used in situations where you receive something that you weren't even trying to put out. It could be a microaggression. It could be an unwanted comment. It could be unsolicited
every
advice.
Every
single day something
every
happens.
Day.
And sometimes refusal is the most appropriate form of care.
Yeah.
Ooh, say more about
elaborate
that.
Yes, elaborate.
Yeah. Can you elaborate on that?
We do not always need to engage by debating or by meeting the same kind of energy with an equal and opposite reaction that's in the same form. I don't think that that's always conducive to care or particularly useful.
I feel like people feel that they lose if they don't retaliate. You know what I mean? And you're right.
And that's not true.
Silence often is almost having the upper hand and knowing I'm not going to engage with your bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where can people find this deck?
It's at autumnbrion.com/everydayoracle.
We're going to link this in our show notes, everyone. You don't have to scramble to write it down. Okay, wait. So you said there's 40 cards, 40.
Yeah.
And it's about, so you were describing the everyday, like, microaggressions, basically, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And so then you go and you pull a card.
You pull the card that's most appropriate for the situation. You can read the message and hold on to it for yourself to remind you that you're not crazy and you didn't deserve it. Or if you want to, you can return to sender and give the card to the person that put out what you didn't want to receive.
It's a mic drop.
Right? Yeah. Melissa's going to have me handing out these cards left and right over there.
Multiple decks
house.
So I can just hand them out.
She's going to be like, nope, Autumn said I could. Here's the card.
And I'm going to be silent while I hand it to you.
If you choose to.
Yeah.
I think of it as a tool for like a type of jujitsu. A couple of my friends started jujitsu within the past few years, which
awesome.
I think is so cool.
Yeah.
And even one of my friend's kids is in jujitsu.
Yeah.
And very cool. I think it's a beautiful practice to observe.
Yeah.
And even the science behind it, where you're using your opponent's momentum. So you might be smaller, you might have a different body type, but you learn to leverage the momentum that comes to you and redirect it.
Mm. Right.
Emotionally and spiritually, that's how I imagine using the Everyday Oracle.
What it's your jiu-jitsu. I see a performance piece in your future. I see Autumn jiu-jitsuing around with some people.
Why not? Spiritual jiu-jitsu. I think that was
spiritual jiu-jitsu. I love that.
Autumn, I'm always curious about this when I see Oracle decks. What is what was your process for making this deck? Were there rituals? Like, did you, obviously everything you do, you're channeling because you're a vehicle for all this brilliance.
For sure.
But how did you work with, you know, spirit? How did you put this deck together?
Yeah. I think of the process for the Adriana Smith performance and so many of these other performances where it just starts with a conversation with self. Mm. So I started by depositing what I had received that was unsolicited and that was not useful for me to carry. I started with that. Some of the like phrases, things that people have said to me, I just wrote them down. And was like, okay, if I am putting down what no longer serves me, this is going to be where I place it. This will be where I place it. There's a ritual that I do typically monthly where I try to write down what no longer serves me and I'll burn it up. Just for like the physical reminder, I think somatics are so important. So it's what you're thinking, what you're saying, but also sometimes we just need like a physical motion, movement associated with it. So that it's kind of sealed. And in the case of that ritual that I do, that seals up. I'm not carrying this anymore. I can't do anything with it. So I was in the studio and I was just writing all of these down. And then I wondered, like, if I had said something back, what would I have said? Or when people have told me about unwanted comments that they got and what they wish they had said back, let me put that down too. And then I just started writing them like spells. And we use spells so much in our everyday life. We may not call it that,
right?
But there's magic in our everyday life and we use that kind of intentionality.
Yep.
But I started writing down the clapbacks as spells.
Oh my God, I love it.
And it was so good for me.
I
was feeling better with each spell.
Yeah.
And then the other side, each card has a spell. And also like a deity on the other side, like a portrait. So I came up with, I imagined, so there's a planet that my work comes from called Planet Esoterica.
Okay.
So I was wondering, like, who are the mothers on Planet Esoterica? Like if these are like saints, like who do you pray to when someone says that your nails look so long? Who do you pray to when somebody asks you, where are you really from? Like I just imagine these deities and I just started sketching out how I would get into drag to embody each of these deities. So each card is me in a different type of drag representing each esoteric deity.
Can we be friends? Can I hang out with you all day?
Come to Inglewood. Come visit.
Next time you're here, we're going to go visit
Autumn.
We're
coming down for a visit next time I'm on the
West Coast.
Come
down from Santa Barbara too, Lori. Yeah, come.
Yeah. Wait, Autumn, so you could get into drag and do this as performance art. Is that in the future?
Maybe.
Okay, we don't want to keep you for too long. I have an ending question, but I also want to let Melissa ask one more question. Bean, what's the most
one more? I have like seven more, but I do want to know if you felt this level of spirituality as a young child or you grew into this and once you discovered it, you like, because you are so deeply spiritual, I can tell, and I'm curious when you recognize that.
I don't know if I always had the vocabulary for by spirituality. I know it's always been present.
Right.
So I Planet Esoterica, I came up with the name for it several years ago as an adult. But so you know when you look back and you realize, oh wow, I've always been doing this. Maybe I just didn't clock it in the moment. But times where you kind of look back and see how the puzzle pieces fit together. I would imagine a different planet when I was probably like 7 or 8 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think I would use the bathroom in my mother's office to travel to the planet. That was supposed to be like how you got there.
Oh my goodness.
A portal potty.
Ah, that is so cute!
Oh, Autumn, we need you to make
credit me when you use that in your next piece.
This is our next installation.
Portal potty.
That's incredible. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue.
Have you ever done any kind of like past life regression or any? Have you ever connected to the idea that you might be from another galaxy?
Yeah,
I wholeheartedly believe that I am. And my godmother, when I was a kid, she collects art, and she is very spiritual. Mm. Actually, a practicing shaman, and facilitates. Folks' journeys with ayahuasca.
Great.
She used to. And she showed me one of the pieces in her house. And I remember she told me, this is the planet that I came from before I was on planet Earth. And I soaked that up. Like it was one of those moments that like reaffirmed for me, like, oh yeah, Channa is my person. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I always just loved rituals.
Yeah.
I'm not super religious. My family is not very religious, but I grew up in an AME church, African Methodist Episcopal. Mm-hmm. The church was more so not a social setting, but like a place for where my families and other families like connected with each other. It's where there was always voter registration and mutual aid and things like that. But my family wasn't super religious, but I loved like the ritual of church.
Right.
I loved observing it and participating in it.
Interesting.
So I think all of those kind of influenced my spirituality and my own practice and how spiritual the folks in my family are.
Right.
I didn't have the name for it when I was small, but I know it's always been a part of me.
Yeah. Wow.
Let's hook her up with a past life reading. Let's get her past life.
Yeah.
I need to know.
I would love that.
Yeah. We have this amazing person who has been on the show who I now feel like, you know, we have this really beautiful relationship with. His name is Ainsley MacLeod. He wrote the book about your soul's journey and what it looks like when it grows. I will send you a note and just connect you. He's amazing.
He did mine. Anyway, it was wild. It's wild.
Yeah. But I want to say this to you. I mean, I also, as you were talking, intuitively very much get for you that you're not an earth being, that you're here to help us evolve from another consciousness. And one thing I know about that experience when you are in the human form is there's a lot of being misunderstood. There's a lot of not being fully, you know, seen. There's a lot of people projecting things because they're uncomfortable or there's fear involved in how much they don't understand you. And I don't want to name your experience for you, but it's definitely something that I know happens when you come from, you know, a different frequency. And I think what's most amazing about you and your work is that joy is such a part of your resistance and your resilience, because that couldn't have been easy, but you found a way to channel your creativity and your joy into it. So I just want to end, because I think it's the most important thing right now for us to hear and all meditate on, is can you talk to us a little bit about that ethos of joy being the pathway to freedom and to resistance, especially in a moment like this?
Mm-hmm. It was a way better question than mine.
I gave you the space.
It's my own fault. But I did get portal potty out of it, I think.
You did get portal potty. That's true.
So yeah. Great. Anyway, great question.
Yeah. How essential joy is.
To liberation. I mean, it's, I think, one of the tenets of your work.
Yeah, it is. It's all that will get us through It is what has gotten us through, and that truth will not change. I think of my ancestors so often. When my mother, dear, and granddaddy migrated to South Central from Birmingham in 1951.
Wow.
They were escaping some super, super scary violence and harm with five kids.
Wow.
And they knew that their utopia was Los Angeles.
Hmm.
Joy was embedded into every decision that they made with their journey, with how they ran their business when they started opening grocery stores here, with how they raised their children, and then with how they raised me when I came along. So I saw firsthand what it looks like when joy gets you through. Like the way that with whatever they had, even when they first started, when they didn't have a lot when they came to LA, it was important that Sunday supper always happened. And I talk about like growing vegetables in your yard because that's what my grandparents did. The food that they fed me, they would like mash up their vegetables from the backyard for my baby food. Wow. And granddaddy, when he was trying to save enough money to open the first grocery store, he was peddling fruit. He was selling fruits and vegetables. But they used what they had to make sure that everybody could still sit at the table, look each other in the eye, and have the warmth and the joy that comes from fellowshipping, that have some, that comes from community. And then that grew. They invited more people into their home, but it was always that same kind of joy and fellowship that they were using. My grandmother, they could vote, and they weren't facing as many barriers to vote when they came to Los Angeles.
Right.
So Mother Dear would always get the voter guide that would come out, and everybody got a copy of it. Even if you were a kid, by the time I came around, I even had a little voter guide and a pencil. And we would just talk about, like in lay people's terms, what were the measures, the propositions that we're voting for, who's running for office, and we could like mark it up and ask questions. And then she started inviting candidates to the house. So they would be at that same table, and you could just ask them like, well, what do you mean when you say you want healthcare to be affordable? But I still see joy and fellowship as a central tenet to that kind of mobilizing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
So I've just seen firsthand, like I know the evidence. I know what it looks like when you bring people together and you make folks feel important, seen, and heard through joy.
Wow.
So that's why I'm convinced that it works, and that's what's going to get us through.
An even better answer to the best question.
Well, and so, what a way to honor their legacy. I mean, I'm sure there is just so much pride for the way that you have taken that mantle forward from your amazing ancestors. And thank you for the work you do. Seriously, we need you desperately. So thank you for showing up, no matter how fucked up it gets out there, and showing us the vulnerable parts of ourselves and our path to joy. And I really hope you write a book, Autumn. And when you do, I hope you come back here and talk to us about it. Autumn, tell us one more time where people can pick up your Everyday Oracle. Go get this deck, guys. It sounds incredible.
Yes. You can order Everyday Oracle online at autumnbrion.com. If you're in Los Angeles, you can pick up the deck in person and purchase it at Sip and Sonder in Inglewood. We have copies of the deck there. And if you're in New York, you can go to the Soft Weapons exhibition that's in Greenpoint, and the decks are in the gift shop.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. Amazing. Awesome. And where can people find you if they want to follow you and your incredible work?
I am Autumn Brion everywhere on socials, my website, Autumn Brion.
Great. Autumn, thank you so much.
It was a
you
real
have
joy.
Seriously brightened our day. Yeah. And I know our thank listeners will feel the same. Come back and talk to us, please.
Yes. And come visit the studio when you're in town. Y'all, please let me know.
Definitely. You better believe it.
We'll just be showing up.
We'll be there. Bye, Autumn. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency.
This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.